From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block in Washington.
And I'm Madeline Brand in California. President Obama took his case for a health care overhaul to the West today. He made the first of several stops in states where skepticism about his plans runs high. He got some pushback today in the town of Belgrade, Montana, but he also heard from supporters. NPR's Don Gagne is traveling with the president and joins us now. Don, tell us about this event in Belgrade.
It was in an airplane hangar, literally right on the tarmac at a small airport. Air Force One landed, and the president and press corps walked all of 200 steps to the event. The crowd, about 1,300 people or so, very polite. It had a very Western feel. There were cowboy hats. There were lots of people here who were clearly supporters of the president, but there were also skeptics and outright opponents in the mix.
And what kind of questions did the president get?
He took nine questions, eight questions, and then somebody made a statement at the end. They were generally supportive. A lot of them were about Medicare or Medicaid and what would reform mean there. There was talk of frustration with the current system. Some came from small businesses struggling to cover their employees. That certainly played into something that the president likes to talk about. But one questioner stood up and said, "Mr. President, to do this, you will have to raise my taxes." He introduced himself this way.
"My name is Randy Rathi. I'm from Ekalaka, Montana. And as you can see, I'm a proud NRA member. I believe in our Constitution, and it's a very important thing. I also get my news from the cable networks because I don't like the spin that comes from them other places."
"Oh, you gotta be careful about them cable networks, though.
No.
But that's okay. Go ahead.
No.
Go ahead with your question."
So, Don, it sounds like the president is a little skeptical of them cable networks. What else? What else?
You know, it's a tactic to kind of disarm a critical question with some charm. But the president said it's a good question. He said that 2/3 of the savings, the cost of this, will come from savings and new efficiencies. But he did say taxes will be raised. But he said, remember, during his campaign, he said nobody who makes less than $250,000 a year will pay more taxes. He said that still holds. People who make more than that can pay more.
And were there any questions from people who think the president should be going even further with his plans?
Absolutely. One woman stood up and said, "Why don't we just get a plan like they have in Canada or Britain?" She said those work just fine. The president does not support that kind of a plan. He has stopped short of that, you know, a single payer option or one where it's just a government takeover. Those are words that he tends to avoid. But he did offer a defense, again, of a public option within a system that he said would be a uniquely American system. And, he said, though, it will not be a government takeover of health care.
Thank you. That's NPR's Don Gagne traveling with the president. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Melissa Block. A contrite and grateful Michael Vick met the media today as a new member of the Philadelphia Eagles. The quarterback served 18 months in federal prison on dogfighting charges. His signing with the Eagles was a surprise. Just last week, the team's coach said Philly wasn't interested in Vick, once one of the NFL's most dynamic offensive stars. Well, now the Eagles have to integrate Vick into their team and manage the negative reaction. NPR's Mike Pesca has the story.
The last football field Michael Vick set foot on as a professional was in Philadelphia, Lincoln Financial Field. Same place, very different time, as last night the Eagles were hosting the Patriots when a ripple went through the crowd. What's this? The home team is signing Michael Vick, the felon who's gone from incandescent to radioactive? The question on everyone's mind was voiced by Vick himself in today's press conference.
"I know everybody's thinking, why Philadelphia?"
The Eagles believe that Vick can return to being a valuable player. That was the necessary condition. But the team's coaches and players also professed a belief in second chances and a belief that Michael Vick believes these words.
"You know, I was wrong for what I did. Everything that happened at that point in time in my life was wrong. And, you know, it was unnecessary and you know, to the life of me, to this day, I can't understand why I was involved in such pointless activity. Why did I risk so much at the pinnacle of my career?
Last night, the Eagles starting quarterback Donovan McNabb backed his new backup. McNabb said the two were very close since Vic was a high school star in Virginia, demonstrating running and passing skills that were drawing comparisons to Donovan McNabb. McNabb described himself as a mentor to Vic and said the younger quarterback was grateful and contrite.
By me communicating with Andy and kind of lobbying to get him here, I think he saw the sincerity as well as someone that was willing to kind of stick their neck out on the line for him.
The Andy mentioned by McNabb is Eagles head coach Andy Reid, whose own sons have come into contact with the criminal justice system. One is currently in a state prison. One recently graduated from a drug treatment program. The coach made an allusion to his sons in explaining his decision to take on Vic.
Well, I'm very honest with you. I've kind of followed Michael's situation very close with the things that my boys went through. So I've had they were right around the same time, so I've had a chance to kind of follow that, and I know the things that Michael's gone through.
Two of the country's most prominent animal rights groups, the Humane Society and the ASPCA, expressed a hopeful tone in press releases. PETA expressed disappointment. Some Eagles fans have already rendered their verdicts. Outside the team's training facility today, a few dozen fans assembled, some with their dogs. Barbara Pesetta of Ridley Township, Pennsylvania, shared the majority sentiment.
I'm not an Eagles fan anymore. I have my own business, which is a dog grooming business. I sell Eagles products, and they are all going to be burned. And I am going to invite my customers to come and burn all their Eagles gear.
Contractually, Vic is to be paid $1.6 million this year, but will serve a suspension of a length determined by league commissioner Roger Goodell. Goodell has said he will rule on Vic's reinstatement by week 6 of the NFL's 17-week season. Mike Pesca, NPR News.
The Michael Vick story may be dominating the sports news today, but it's also a busy weekend for actual competition. And that includes a showdown in Berlin between the world's two fastest men. Our regular sports commentator, Stefan Fatsis, joins us now, as he does most Fridays. Hi, Stefan.
Hey.
Okay, so before we get to those really, really fast guys, let's talk a little bit more about Michael Vick. And you actually spent some time inside the NFL. How big a risk do you think the Eagles are taking here?
I think there are three things we need to think about: on the field, off the field, and money. That $1.6 million salary that we just heard about may seem excessive for a convicted felon who hasn't played in 2 years, but it's below the NFL average, and Vic likely won't get that much because players are paid on a prorated weekly basis in the NFL. But it's much more than the minimum salary for a player with Vic's experience, which is $620,000, so clearly there was competition for his services. Now, on the football side, Philly already has a veteran starting quarterback, so if the team plays well, there won't be calls for Vic to start, and the belief is he'll be used in some sort of hybrid running passing role. But Philadelphia didn't even give Vic a workout before it signed him. His body needs to acclimate again to the constant physical pounding and regain the timing you need to play this sport well.
And we just heard in Mike's piece that fan who wants to burn her Eagles gear. Is the risk then that the Eagles are just taking too big a risk off the field?
Yeah, will all of this become a distraction? Are fans going to buy less or burn more merchandise? Will sponsors cancel contracts? How loud will the absolutely appropriate debate on the moral and ethical implications of allowing Michael Vick to play football again grow? We are in uncharted territory here. There are arguably no other examples of a high-profile team sport athlete returning after a long prison stay. And teams and star players represent cities, and Philadelphia is not known for its quiet and tolerant fan base.
Right. So could this then be a disaster?
Well, you know, the NFL is pretty adept at crisis management and control, and I'm sure that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell carefully screened Vic's possible destinations. The Eagles have a stable and respected front office, a veteran head coach, a competitive team. Vic won't have to be the star here. The Eagles can roll him out slowly, insist that he stay quiet and humble, and hope that the focus fades away. And if it doesn't go well, it's the NFL. Contracts aren't guaranteed. Players can be released at any moment.
Okay, let's go to our other topic. The track and field championships begin tomorrow in Berlin, and the event we've been talking about is the 100-meter dash. It's on Sunday. Tell us about it.
Well, you've got fun-loving world record holder Usain Bolt of Jamaica, and you've got the quieter, workmanlike Tyson Gay of the United States. Gay is the defending world champion, but he failed to make the finals at the Beijing Olympics last year, and Bolt stole the show with a record run of 9.69 seconds. This year, Gay has been the faster man. He said he expects it'll take a new world record to win on Sunday, perhaps breaking 9.6 seconds.
Breaking 9.6 seconds. Put that in some context. How much faster is the fastest human running these days?
Well, the 10-second barrier was first broken in 1968, and since 1983, the record has been equaled or broken a total of 18 times. That is way more than in other events. There have been advances in training, track surfaces, shoes, the composition of running outfits, and you can run this race frequently, so there are more times to break the record. So how much faster can a human go? Well, you might remember that Bolt celebrated before hitting the finish line in Beijing, and afterward, a physicist calculated that if Bolt had kept churning all the way to the end, he would have run 9.55. So if we accept that, it's taken 40 years to shave half a second off of the record. Right now, it doesn't seem possible that the unenhanced human body could shave off another half second, but maybe we should talk again in another 40 years, Madeline.
If we're still talking then. Okay. Stefan Fatsis is the author of A Few Seconds of Panic, A Sports Writer Plays in the NFL. He joins us on Fridays to talk about sports and the business of sports. Thanks, Stefan.
Thanks, Madeline.
Some borrowers who want to modify their loans are being offered a surprising solution. Lenders are suggesting what some people call extreme short payoffs. From WCPN in Cleveland, Mari Saito reports.
Kimberly Gates sits in her small, fenced-in backyard because the inside of her two-story brick bungalow has been taken over by construction workers. That's because Gates says she didn't ask enough questions when she bought her Cleveland house in 2004. Later, she discovered the house had structural problems, that her adjustable-rate mortgage was completely upside down, and that the title company owner who worked on her loan went to prison for fraud. Things got worse when she temporarily lost her job as a home health aide. She fell behind on her mortgage, and the penalties and interest kept mounting.
So the value of the house is $36,000, and the land is $14,000. And I'm owing almost $100,000 on the principal.
The not-so-lucky servicer of this toxic asset was Florida-based Ocwen Financial Corporation. In late June, Ocwen charged off the loan. That means that the company took the write-off, but Gates still owed the money.
So I called a mortgage company. They told me that I can settle for my home. And I said, well, settle for how much? He said, well, you owe between $90,000 to $100,000, so you can settle for $9,000. I said, oh, wow, okay, let me call you back.
Gates then called her housing counselor at Cleveland's Community Housing Solutions. Andy Nikiforovs heads the nonprofit and says Ocwen ultimately agreed to take $6,000 to settle Gates' debt.
We have seen a number of cases now in the last month or two where lenders are in fact willing to write off a significant portion of the outstanding mortgage, some cases 80%, some cases 90%.
Gates got her payoff funds from a forgivable loan from the state of Ohio and a low-interest loan from her county, Cuyahoga. Gates' mortgage is now $53 a month. Paul Bellamy heads the Cuyahoga County Foreclosure Prevention Program. He says the rescue fund was set up to help keep people in their homes with their original mortgage.
Now, people come to us and say, we've got a servicer. If we can just get $3,000 together, they'll walk away from a five-figure debt and call it a day.
Bellamy says the county has helped nearly a dozen of what he calls extreme short payoffs. Loan servicers willing to cut this kind of deal say avoiding foreclosure costs is smart in tough real estate markets. A Cleveland State University study found that the median price of foreclosed houses in Gates' neighborhood is $8,000. Paul Kochis is senior counsel at Ocwen Financial.
To the extent we can cut a deal with a borrower on a short payoff that, according to our calculations, would return more money to the investor than the investor would realize in a foreclosure, that all makes sense.
Borrowers and loan counselors say an extreme short payoff offer can feel like winning the lottery. But the lucky streak ends if you can't make the payoff. Bus driver Matthew Sloan fell behind on the mortgage on his suburban Cleveland house after diabetes forced him off the job. Earlier this month, his loan servicer, GMAC, offered him a payoff deal on his $140,000 mortgage.
$40,000? You don't see that every day. But right now, I just don't have $40,000. If I did, you know, I'd buy this house. I'd buy this house just like that.
Sloan has 45 days to find funding and is considering options from loans from other banks to private investors. He hasn't had much luck. But despite the challenges, loan counselors welcome these extreme short payoff offers as another tool to help clean up the mortgage mess. For NPR News, I'm Mari Saito in Cleveland.
Mad Men takes place in the early 1960s. Let's flash forward to 1969. That was 40 years ago. Commentator Marcus Rosenbaum went to Woodstock then. It was cold. It was wet. There was no food. He only stayed one night.
There were three carloads of us driving up from Washington. And if we got separated, well, we had a good plan. We'd hold up a stick with three bandanas, two red and one blue. About 8 miles out, it became clear we were going no further, so we grabbed some blankets and started hoofing it down the road. We walked and walked and walked, and 3 hours later, we arrived at what clearly was the venue. We headed toward the music and huddled under a couple of blankets as the skies opened up and dumped relentless quantities of water on us. I think we were there only a couple of sets before the official stage shut down for the night. I dozed off with two others under a single blanket to endless announcements about lost people, lost things, and bad drugs. We had no idea how many other souls were suffering a similar fate until sunrise. As the music started, we peeked out from under our blanket and, oh my God, body after body, side by side, hundreds of yards in front of us, up to the stage and then up the sides of the hills all around. The musician David Crosby is quoted as saying it was like an encampment of the Macedonian army on the Greek hills. Somebody said, "Was that one red bandana and two blue bandanas, or one blue and two red?" We laughed so hard it almost warmed us up. Almost. Then someone said, "Let's go home." We started our long hike out, found the car, drove back to Washington, and all took long, hot showers. Only then did we start to think that maybe we should have stayed. Like so many things from the 60s, Woodstock was a blend of the miserable and the euphoric, the remarkable and the mundane, the sophisticated and the callow. And like so many things in the past, it's hard to separate the true from the false memories. But here's one more fact. After a good night's sleep, I broke up with the girl who'd slept on my left shoulder and started going out with the girl who'd slept on my right. The girl who'd been on my right shoulder sent me a note the other day to remind me that we had watched the moon landing together in my basement apartment. I wondered why, since I knew we didn't start going out until after Woodstock. She said, "I don't know. It was the 60s. The time-space continuum was distorted then." Yep, but the music was great.
Marcus Rosenbaum lives in Washington, D.C.